You know, comfort is personal. For me, comfort is crawling into bed at the end of a long day and knowing I'm going to wake up feeling good, not sore, not sweaty, just rested. That's why I love what Avocado Green Mattress is doing. Their eco-organic mattress is their most affordable option. But here's the thing. It doesn't cut corners. It's a hybrid latex mattress with the perfect medium firmness, soft, supportive, and designed to last. You'll feel just as good getting into it as you do getting out of it. And here's something I really appreciate. Avocado owns their own springs, wool, and latex supply, so they pass the savings on to you. That means you get healthier, organic sleep at a surprisingly affordable price without compromise. Plus, it's sustainably made with trusted certifications that prove it's better for you and the planet. That's real peace of mind. So head to avocadogreenmattress.com today and save up to 20% on Avocado's certified organic mattresses. Avocado, dream of better.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
Picks, Knicks, Sticks, Picks. A podcast about Rob's movies with your hosts, Rob Spuak and Josh Sroka. And now, ladies and gentlemen, let the show begin.
I love that made you smile. That makes me happy.
It's AI, right?
The voices. Yeah, the voices AI. Yeah. I had two to choose from. Big announcer. I also, the AI service I purchased can do Burt Reynolds. And it just wasn't exciting enough. No, so we didn't go with Burt Reynolds.
At some point, we'll need Burt.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Everybody, welcome to this program that will change your life. It is Hicks, Nick, Sticks, Picks. I'm Rob Spiewak along with Josh Sroka. And this movie podcast literally came out of a fever dream for me. I'm just getting over COVID. And if I cough, don't worry, it's not catching through the internet. But this is the idea, is that I like old movies. Josh has not seen as many old movies as me, so I force him to watch them. And here is our official, was this an AI generated description?
Yes, it was. Well, okay. It was. Would you prefer to see what I told ChatGPT that came out with a nice description?
I'd love it. I would love it. Yeah.
I wrote, Hicks, Nicks, Ticks, Picks is a podcast about Rob's movies. Rob Spiewak loves movies. He always has. And on this podcast, each week, Rob picks an old movie that Josh has never seen. We watch it, then discuss it. It is as simple as someone who has loved the movie for decades and someone who has seen the movie with fresh eyes.
That's great. And then AI turned it into Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks is a movie obsession. Maybe I should have AI read it. Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks is where movie obsession meets fresh confusion. Every week, Rob Spiewak dusts off a beloved classic from his collection and makes Josh Sroka watch it, usually for the very first time. Rob brings the nostalgia and Josh brings the wait, what just happened. Together, they argue, laugh, and maybe even agree on why these movies matter or why they don't. So this is our first episode, and it came out, the first movie is actually not exactly the format of the show, because ideally we want to tease the movie before we do the episode so you can watch along.
It's hard to do that when you don't have an episode.
On a debut episode, right. Yes. But when I was out one day last week, the subject of this movie came up on the show. What happened there, Josh?
Yeah, so it's perfect timing because while you were out having your fever dream,
right?
We were talking about, I don't know how it came up, we were talking about Wizard of Oz or movies that scarred us as kids, and Return to Oz came up on the Mike O'Mara show because it has scarred me as a kid and something that I have not gone back to, and Mike never knew of it. Like, it hit that mid-80s time frame where he had moved on from children movies.
Yeah.
And was busy with life and did not know this existed. So we took a look at the trailer.
I was 14 when it came out. I saw it. I haven't seen it since. You said to me, of course you have the DVD, which I did. But I watched it again for the first time since 1985, which doesn't seem like 40 years ago. But it merits some discussion. And this is where I can start the Return to Oz music.
And I'll say, if you want to pause the podcast now and go watch the movie first, it is available on Disney Plus.
Or come to my house and I will loan you the DVD, which has got not a great transfer. Okay, so this, I think the most notable thing for me up front is a Disney movie. But
yes,
in 1985, I think Disney was kind of between their old classics and their new classics. And I don't know where this fits in.
Yeah, I think this is when they introduced the vault to try to keep those old classics going.
Which is actually based on old Disney's strategy that the animated movies would be theatrically released every 7 years because new kids all the time. But when I went to video, they did the vault thing. It doesn't feel like a Disney movie to me. I mean, right from the beginning of it.
No, it's too dark. The entire feel of it is too dark for a Disney movie.
At the front of it, and actually after I watched this, I watched a good hunk of the original 1939 Wizard of Oz to make sure I wasn't imagining things that I thought this movie eliminated, and I wasn't. I liked that it started in Kansas with like dull, muted colors. Because yeah. I was expecting when she got to Oz, it was going to be sensational. Well, but even Oz had dull, muted colors. I didn't care for that.
Well, there's no relation to this movie to The Wizard of Oz. Like, they created this based on the books. They went back and said, oh, we're going to do it our way from the books.
Well, I mean, I think it has some relation because the first movie, the original movie, was based on the first book, and this is the,
yeah, the
second and third books.
Yeah, not the creators.
Yeah, okay, very, very good. So,
it's Disney doing what Disney does best, trying to make money off an old story.
Exactly, yeah. I did find out that... go ahead, Josh.
Everything in this movie, and it hits up right at the intro, is everything is uglier.
Yes!
Even Toto is ugly.
You're right! He's like a mutt. He's not a perfect terrier. And also, just the theme of the movie, this could never be The Wizard of Oz based on the theme alone. Because the original movie with Judy Garland was about a young child, essentially, although she was 16, she was playing younger, that wanted to go someplace that wasn't Kansas. And it's sort of a wishful, kind of a wistful thing to wish for. It's nice. In this one, Dorothy wants to leave Kansas because they're going to electrocute her. Use electric therapy.
But it starts before that with her missing Oz.
Well, yeah, yeah.
And she misses her friends.
But that's a very different motivation to actually have a child under electric treatments to forget about Oz as opposed to imagining going there.
And they drive her like two towns away.
Yeah.
She made a comment on the wagon, I've never gone this far.
That's crazy.
And then they just ditch her.
Yep.
At this house and like leave her with this strange doctor and creepy nurse.
Exactly. And I will say this. I did not remember that Firouza Balk played Dorothy in this. And she was fantastic. Here's a picture of her right now. Really cute, really good actress. And for 10 years old, what really flipped me is that she was like the kids in Stranger Things in that she didn't seem like a professional kid. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like a real genuine performance.
Yes.
Then it struck me that this is the same young lady who was in The Craft. And she grew up to be a little different looking. Yeah, goth.
This movie scarred her also.
Probably. And I won't lie, I'm not totally not into Firouza Balk as in looking like that. I was a theater kid. But what fact I found that I did not know, did you watch The Sopranos when it was on HBO?
No. I did not watch The Sopranos.
In the first time they ran season 3, Firouza Balk played a character in it. Let's look at that now. I'm sorry.
What? But muted.
There she is in the dark hair.
They have a great little black dress I saw over there. I have. Thing is, it's for a funeral. Oh, I'm so sorry.
But what was so nutty is that she didn't want to commit to a long-term plot arc, and she did that one episode. HBO went back and reshot all the footage with a different actress so that now on rebroadcast...
Oh, so they can continue.
Yeah, so it existed that she was in it, but that it will never be seen again, likely, unless you go to YouTube. I thought she was great.
Well, when you do something like Return to Oz, you don't want to be known for anything else in your life.
It is. I mean, it's the Velvet Handcuffs when you're 10 years old and you're in a movie. This is a big movie. Make no mistake. Even though it was overshadowed by, I think that summer the big hit was, it might have been the movie with the Cocoon. Cocoon was the big movie in the summer of 85.
But remember, this is directed at kids.
Yeah, exactly. Movie. And at no point does it get to be a kids movie. One problem I had with it is that it's too long for a kids movie.
I was shocked how long it was. It was almost every 2 hours long.
Yeah, every bit of 2 hours. And of course, the terror that's in it is no good. I did notice this. Let's go ahead and talk about the things that I found most horrifying and see if you can link up with me. The Wheelers. This like almost like a street gang in the dilapidated Oz that have wheels for hands and feet.
Yes, they were like a Cirque du Soleil type monkey clowns gang. They were creepy. Like even their hair was like this plasticky rubber.
It was surreal. That's a fever dream character. And I don't know if that's in the original book, but whoever realized the character did a great job of making it horrifying. The Gnome King, who sort of transformed from rock. Oh, yeah, a lot of talking and looking rocks, rocks everywhere. He transformed more humanoid as he went on, but he's horrifying. And that horrible princess, too. I mean, the character, the villains.
Princess Mumby.
Thank you, Princess Mumby.
With the removable heads.
That,
to just choose whatever head she wants to wear that day.
That hall of heads is too weird.
But your list of things that horrify you, it'd be shorter to say things that didn't.
I guess you're right.
All the characters did. Even the good guys were weird.
Yeah, I agree.
The Gump, which was the moose that they stuck on a sofa.
I don't understand the idea of
that. Where did that come from?
I have no idea. I don't know. That was extraordinarily strange. And I can buy Pumpkinhead. I guess it's Jack Pumpkinhead.
Pumpkinhead, which has to be the influence for Jack Skeleton.
I actually looked into it, and it is. Danny Elfman. Good. Not it's Danny Elfman. He loved it.
Tim Burton
loved it. Yes, exactly. So all
it
of that.
Looks just like him.
But it's like they went around and tried to find everything that frightens kids and put it in a movie.
It really it wasn't supposed to be a scary movie.
No, there was drowning, there's fire, there's claustrophobia, there's crumbling people made of sand, there's those weird figures in that hall of heads, there's death, there's of course evil doctors, and what I found almost unforgivable is that it's a standard structure of, you know, a journey movie, right?
Yeah.
And on the journey, there is nothing to let up from the stress and horror of the thing. At least in The Wizard of Oz, you got like vignettes between when the witch appeared, but the whole trip was a struggle.
Well, Bolina was supposed to be that relief. Bolina the chicken.
I don't like that chicken. Well, that's the first thing I wrote in my mind.
I don't like anything that talks, that shouldn't talk. It gets sassy throughout the movie where it's supposed to be the comic relief.
Yeah, it was sloppily written. It's a bad character. Yes. If you're going to voice a chicken, at least give it something. And the chicken lives in the pumpkin head, and it's just strange.
When even in 85, everyone knows The Wizard of Oz. It's a classic already by then.
Sure, yeah.
Why do you then go and say, we're going to remake this so different that we're even casting Dorothy way younger than she was?
Exactly. It's really hard to say. I don't know if they're trying to separate themselves. I know they had to pay MGM a royalty to use ruby slippers because those were invented not from the book, but for the first movie. So maybe they had a little bit of antagonistic attitude towards MGM and the movie, and they wanted to make it different. But if they wanted to make it different, they sure as heck made it different.
Yeah. It's got nothing. It's so different that it's almost, and nowadays it would be a prequel because it's so much younger. It's so much uglier.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Your sequels are where things get shiny and prettier and people grow up.
Yeah, I was disappointed. And here's another thing is that it is a really stunning movie to look at. It's a really good looking movie and it's not like anything I'd ever seen. There are so many different varietals of special effects in this movie to make all this stuff happen. I know you did some research about that.
Well, I was looking because it looked like green screen. There was hues and stuff, but green screen wasn't invented yet, so they said they used different angles and projectors behind her and stuff to make it to make it work.
Yeah, I saw claymation, absolutely. I saw...
Stop motion.
Stop motion. There was definitely some sort of rear projection going on.
Yes.
And I think they can use primitive green screen at that time, not like we have now, but there is a primitive way to use it, because I know...
Apparently not. Apparently it wasn't invented in time.
Well, I can cite this as a fact. In the movie The Greatest Show on Earth by Cecil B. DeMille, he wrecked up a process shot with green screen that had a green halo around one of the characters. So he just inserted a shot of a green spotlight on them. Oh. So, but I think the modern green screen, that's more of a mechanical separation than I think today it's more of an electronic one. I could be absolutely wrong. But the grain of the film, to me, it was exciting to see this. I know you don't like it, but like some of the big shots, the film had the same grain look as like Star Wars and the big shots in Star Wars.
Yes.
And it's not a flaw. It's just the way the film looked back then. And that was sort of a throwback to me. I thought the special effects as a rule were really good.
Yeah, no, I think they were fine. I think the rock monster movement and all with the claymation and all worked out really well. And they did the forced perspective stuff well. They did the quick camera cuts really well for popping things in and out.
Yeah. So. I was never bored during the movie. It's a long movie, but it's very plot thick. You have to pay attention.
Yes.
And maybe it's because
a few times writing down notes or looking something up and realizing, oh, I need to rewind it 2 minutes. I don't know how we got here.
Yeah. And it was daunting to me because I know the original movie backwards and forwards. You know, I don't even need to watch it because I've known it so many times. But there's so many little things going on in this. One thing I will give it a big thumbs up for is the idea of using the doctor and the nurse from the sanitarium back in Kansas to play the Gnome King and the princess. That's, you know, not unlike in the original, where the farmhands became the Scarecrow and the Tin Man and the Cowardly Lion. I thought that was clever, although I do think the doctor got sort of edged out of it because half of his time he was all covered in clay. And that's another horrifying character, the Gnome King.
Oh, he is. He is. And then suddenly they decide like they couldn't get the facial expressions they wanted with clay or whatever, and suddenly he becomes a human-looking rock thing.
That threw me. I rewound on that to see if I missed something, but I didn't. He just became more humanoid.
Right.
Yeah.
This movie is supposed to take place about 6 months after The Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
So that's why you see it's still the tornado still has the buildings torn up.
Right, right.
And everything. Is this really what medicine was like back then, where they were going to electrocute this kid because she was having dreams?
I would have to guess. I always considered that The Wizard of Oz, the original, took place in 1939, like in Dust Bowl America out in Kansas. So this is obviously set further back because of the technology they're using with horses and buggies, because by 1939 there would be cars. So I guess you're looking at like 1890. Are they electrifying patients? That's what I need to know.
Well, that's the confusing part when you try to look up where these years are set, because they're clearly cleaning up from the hurricane. So it's after The Wizard of Oz.
Cyclone.
And tornado, she wants to return to Oz.
Yeah.
But The Wizard of Oz says it takes place in 1939, and then Return to Oz says it takes place around 1900.
It's very mixed up.
I don't know what's going on here with the time frame. But I am creeped out with the strapping the child down and putting headphones on her and let's electrocute her.
And we're both parents, and maybe that wouldn't be as horrifying to a child. I can't imagine it wouldn't be, but I know that as a parent, when you see a kid in dire circumstances like that under the, you know, advice of adults, it not only is horrifying, it pisses me off. I hated watching that. But it's not a sensitive way to handle that topic.
But let's look at it from the parents' perspective. They're sending her to this psych ward to get electrocuted because she has imaginary friends.
Well, it's Annie M is not great. And it's not their parents to be, you know, point of fact. It's her aunt. She's all for it. Uncle Henry is sort of the hero here because he doesn't want to electrocute her.
Right. Well, he's got a broken leg, so he can't do anything.
God.
He has to just sit there in his rocking chair.
The whole movie is a bit of a disaster. Let's take a pause and we come back a few more points and then we will rate it and we will reveal what our movie is for next week. So we'll be back. This, as you know, is Nick's Hicks. I'm sorry, I messed it up myself. Hicks, Nick's, Sticks, Picks. And we are back with Hicks, Nick's, Sticks, Picks. Rob Spiewak with Josh Soroka talking about Return to Oz, 1985, from the Disney Corporation. It is not a big, good-feeling movie. Even at the end, didn't leave me feeling happy.
Should we just go through the movie? We've talked a lot around the movie. Should we just go through it? Storyline?
Yeah, please. You begin.
Well, all right, so we start. Everything's uglier. Dorothy's younger. She's had her Aunt Em doesn't believe her, so they send her out to this place to get electrocuted.
And yeah, two towns over.
Yeah, so some random girl, who's also apparently a patient there, grabs her and unstraps her from the bed during a blackout during the storm, mm-hmm. and they go running outside.
Oh, you missed the fact that she found a key back on her farm.
Okay, she found a key, which thankfully she took with her.
Yeah, always take the key with you.
Thankfully, they didn't remove it when they were getting ready to electrocute her.
Right.
So, because she'll need that later.
Yes.
But she decides the best way to get away from this doctor and nurse chasing her
right.
is to go hop in a cage and float down the river.
Again, here's your claustrophobia and drowning horrors.
Yes.
Which is, again, not really advancing the plot, the fact that it's horrifying. It's just horrifying. And so she wakes up and she's in Oz, but not really. She's in some sort of magical pond that's surrounded by the deadly sand.
With Bolina, the chicken.
Yeah, the chicken.
Remember, chicken showed up.
Right. Well, now, the chicken came from Kansas because I think, gosh, it seems like a million years ago. The chicken originally uncovered the key.
Found the key earlier.
Right. Okay.
But now the chicken can talk.
Yes.
Which is different because Toto was not able to talk when Toto transferred.
And yeah. And again, a talking chicken is fine, but I don't like the character. It was like really sloppy written wise guy cartoon style dialogue.
It was supposed to make kids laugh, is all I can figure.
Didn't make me laugh, and I don't think it made kids laugh either. I'm just guessing that.
And I feel like this is when we first saw the green screen-ish projection, whatever they were mm-hmm. doing
yeah,
around
the big,
Dorothy. This is
the
where
big
it stood
shots.
Out.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Exactly. Because the stuff that was shot ostensibly in Kansas looked all on location. It looked all real to me. So I forget. How does she? Oh, she walks on rocks so she doesn't touch the sand.
Yes.
That will turn her into a crumbling sand body, right?
And then she finds the lunch pail tree.
Right.
And again, she is transferred to Oz. We followed her story in Oz the first time around.
Yeah.
None of this stuff was in Oz when we saw it the first time. But she knows all of this. She knows I'm in a deadly pond. She knows, oh, I just pull one of these lunch pails down and there's a ham sandwich inside.
I did not like I like the apple trees in the original movie, and
yes.
I guess this is sort of a nod to that, but a lunch pail tree? No, and I don't like the way the trees were themselves. And again, all through it, talking rocks and rocks that have eyes and mouths.
Well, the rocks are the spies. They're not talking to her. They're just spying on her.
But they didn't really
back to the Gnome King.
They didn't really get into that for a while, did they? I mean, we saw a lot of rocks before we knew what they were doing.
We saw lots of eyes moving before they explained it.
Right. So she goes, she finds her house that crashed in Munchkinland, but the Munchkins are gone now. Cause I mean, the Land of Oz is apparently divided into districts, and Munchkinland is one. The Emerald City is another, but her house is there, but there are no Munchkins anywhere. And so she feels she needs to get with her talking chicken. She needs to get to Emerald City. And very distressing to me to see the yellow brick road so destroyed.
Right.
That happened in 6 months?
Well, we don't know how much time has progressed in Oz.
Oh, I guess you're right. Yeah, so, I guess I need to suspend that disbelief.
Right.
And she goes, and then...
And this is where the first creepy characters show up,
mm-hmm.
as the Wheelers find her.
And they're, as we said earlier, like a street gang, but so surreal.
But also totally 80s skater influence.
100%. Yeah. It looked, you know what they look like? They look like they belong in the movie Tron, which is another Disney movie. But I feel that they're just totally misplaced. Even if they were written by the original author, L. Frank Baum, I can't imagine that's what he was envisioning. I would have loved to have seen the Wheelers be more mechanical, like TikTok. like if they had been built by like as robots or something.
I want to see what the Wheelers do when they're not chasing her. Do they just all hang out with their long legs and long arms? Like they've got like a giraffe body structure, but then just the head where the neck would be.
Yeah, they're bad people. So she escapes them. Yes. Has she picked up TikTok yet?
No. They chase her into a closet. She locks herself in the closet.
Ah, because she has the key.
She has the key. The Wheelers yell at her through the eye hole.
Right.
The key.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where she finds dusted up TikTok. And thankfully, he's got his instructions on his back.
Yeah, they're mounted to his back. I love the fact that he had like different wind-up keys for different functions. I did like that.
I like the fact that he's called TikTok, where nowadays we think of TikTok as this stupid app that came out of nowhere.
Do you think any relation?
I tried to somehow in my brain make that guy be the influence for the name for this app, and I can't come up with it.
Because the spelling is identical. It's not usual spelling. So
I know. I looked it up. It's the same TikTok.
Yeah. And that, you know what? I wasn't horrified by him. I kind of liked that character.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. So they continue to travel. And then I guess is that that's when the princess catches them. And
yes, they go to see the princess for help.
Right.
And then they realize the princess is a bad person.
Evil with that room full of, I'm still back to those room full of heads. I don't like that.
Well, and then they find, I like that she has her original head. She has all her options displayed nicely in this hallway. Dorothy finds her original head and it's just thrown in like a broom closet. It's just stored away.
It is. I thought that was a really stunning effect when you had that hallway of heads because they're moving.
And I love thinking through the manual, how they shot it, where it's just a bunch of people with their heads sticking through.
Yeah.
Like black curtains.
But they did such a nice job.
It was great.
Yeah. So they get apprehended and locked up. And that is when they meet Jack Pumpkinhead.
Yes.
When they're okay.
Yes. They get locked up. Jack Pumpkinhead is already locked up in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to do something to bring him to life.
Did they? I thought he was.
Was he already?
I think he was already alive. Okay. Right, but he wanted Dorothy to be his mom.
Oh, right.
Which
Dorothy
is a weird.
Was his mom.
That's a weird. Another. I mean, not horror-like, but just odd to have a 10-year-old being a mom. Yeah,
and it was, can I call you mom even though you're not my mother? So yeah. It was like, they even set it up weird.
Yeah.
And then, where they come up with the idea of, let's take this moose head off the wall.
The gump.
Stick it to the bed and create the gump, which will then fly us out of the castle.
Now, could that possibly be related to Forrest Gump?
No.
Okay, just checking.
No. Forrest Gump came much later.
Okay,
I don't think.
Okay.
Steven Spielberg was sitting there thinking.
Well, I mean, the best thing of the movie might have been the name Gump. That might have been the whole thing. They needed to go back to the Hall of Heads to get the powder to bring Gump to life.
Yes.
Right? Wasn't that
yes.
in the locker with
did.
The original
yes. head? That's okay. how they ran into the original head.
Okay. So
you're right. Gump might be the best character. Because as dumb as he is, he plays the character the best when they're flying and he's like, I don't know how I got here.
Yeah, exactly. I like the fact that he's sort of, buying off the disbelief that he's in part of it.
Yes.
And he's not, you don't hate him like you hate the chicken.
Right.
His comedy relief is better. Yeah. Yeah. So they land, and also they've established this backstory, which I didn't really grab onto, that the reason the Scarecrow, who was left to run Oz, the Emerald City, is gone is that he took all the emeralds and left. And Dorothy says, that's not something he would do.
Right.
And so that's when they get to
the Gnome King. I also didn't remember, was the Scarecrow ever put in charge of Oz?
Yeah, he was.
Was he? Is that how the movie ends?
And the right before they're in the balloon, I believe the wizard in 1939 movie says something to the effect of, and in light of his marvelous intellect, I leave the Scarecrow in charge. Exactly.
Okay.
So they get there and they encounter the horrifying Gnome King, which goes back and forth between like claymation and a person and a lot of makeup.
Yes.
And laying on this, again, there hasn't been a pleasant interlude in this whole journey so far. And then he lays it on them that if you touch something and say Oz, if it's that he's turned them into statues or ornaments.
Right.
And if you touch something and say Oz and it's the right person, he comes to life or they get destroyed. And right. that's where we watch all of her friends be destroyed, which is another thing that kids don't need to deal with.
Right. And this is all because the only one they're trying to find is the Scarecrow.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And all, and she has to touch it and press and know which one. It's very much The Last Crusade, drink from Jesus's cup.
Exactly. The Grail. Yeah. Right. I got that same right feeling one. Too. So obviously, as a just a small favor from the filmmakers, she finds them all because they're all green objects and brings them to life. So that's a good thing, I guess. But by this point, there's so much going on, I'm kind of lost as to whether or not it's going to resolve or not. But it does.
Right. Yeah, I mean, she unlocks one of them and gets one right. And
right.
then the princess starts yelling at the Rock King, the Gnome yeah. King. And then he starts setting on fire and destroying the place and turns in this big thing.
Wasn't he allergic to eggs?
Yes, because that's where the chicken comes into play.
Right. Now, that was when I stood up. I said, this is not what I expected
now,
at all.
Well, it also goes back to the beginning of the movie where the reason the key was found is because Bolino would not lay any eggs.
That's right.
And
that's
they were
right.
looking for eggs.
So anyway, so they defeat that and Dorothy gets her ruby slippers. And I liked the parade sequence back in Oz and she gets to go back home. But it's not like in the first movie where she wakes up warm and cozy in her bed. She washes up on the side of a riverbed.
Right.
And it's disgusting.
Which means when you go back to the very beginning, so when she ran into the river, that's yeah. all real.
Right.
And
exactly.
she really did like go into the river to escape it. But
and then we get to see that the doctor and the nurse have been arrested. So we get some closure yes. there, which is good.
But what did they get? Why? Why did they get arrested?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, because what they're doing wasn't illegal.
The other kids said there were lots of kids there locked up. But Annie M. Freely gave her to the kid,
yeah.
to the doctor, and said, yeah, go ahead and electrocute her. I'll pick her up later.
It's very strange.
We also that's also when we learn that his leg is not broken.
That's right. Exactly.
As he drops the cane to run and pick her up out of the water.
Magical. Magical. Maybe the ruby slippers had something to do with that. I will say this about the movie. It's not a boring movie, and I didn't hate it, but it is weird.
It is weird, and I totally understand why I was creeped out as a kid.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, I was not all that settling as an adult.
When this came out, I was 5, which means I probably saw it at the age of 5 or 6. And I don't want my 11-year-olds to watch this thing. It's so messed up.
Did you see it in a theater, or do you remember?
No, I think
I was going to say, yeah, in a theater, taking a kid there, that would be the worst, I think.
Yeah, no, yeah. I don't think I ever went to theaters as a kid. Very rarely. Back then.
I it's certainly not The Wizard of Oz, but it's good, I think.
So they tried to make Dorothy the queen, but
right.
she has to go back home.
Right, and so, she washes up on the riverside.
Right.
And the end.
Except she has her magic mirror.
Oh, I forgot the magic mirror, but she can't.
Oz on it, and now she can see the queen.
Is it Ozma is the queen?
I don't know.
I think it is Ozma, but she's not allowed to show Ozma to Annie M.
Right.
So it's a secret. So again,
Annie M has to always think she's crazy.
That's the problem, is that there's no resolution on the fact that they think she's nuts.
Right.
Which is why it really is a fever dream movie.
Which is why I am ready for the sequel. I think it is time to make a new version in 2025
uh-huh.
where Dorothy is 70, 80 years old
yeah,
in a nursing home and dying and misses her friends in Oz again.
Well, you know, if Dorothy is like 85, that would be set in 1985. She could go see this movie. To visit her friends.
Now you're in some weird time loop. This movie that takes place 40 years before it happened.
Exactly. I think that's actually a really great idea. I think you
could easily do that and bring back Wizard of Oz that way in a not creepy way.
Yeah. The movie, I can remember watching it on TV every year when I was a kid, the original movie.
Yes.
It had scary moments, but it wasn't
the forest.
Horrifying. Yeah.
But once you get out of the forest, you get the flowers and all, and that's pretty. And you get songs that calmed things down.
Exactly.
Where this was the entire time.
There's no interlude of happiness. And I think that's maybe the weakest thing about it. There's just no joy along the way. It's not a kid's flick. One thing I did find interesting is I don't know that the Muppets had been bought by Disney yet, but the voice of Jack Pumpkinhead is Jim Henson's son.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if that might have been an early collab between the two of them, but the voice was good. But then you have to look at that horrifying creature with this. I hated his stick arms. I of don't
Jack
like.
Pumpkinhead?
Yeah, I didn't like that. He looked spindly. And also, maybe it's because I have a past in gardening. When he asked them to check his head for any rot or soft spots, it's so sad that this man's head is going to rot because it's a carved pumpkin. And he's aware of it, that his end is coming soon, but I guess it doesn't happen. So what do you do?
So does that, did Jack Pumpkin King then become Jack Skeleton? Does it all flow into each other?
No. I think they might have been
just inspiration.
I think they're cousins is how it works.
They're cousins.
They are cousins. So as I've said, there's no joy along the way. It's not a kid's flick.
No.
I didn't like all of it. But I was never bored, so my rating for this, I give this 6 fever dreams out of a possible 10 fever dreams.
Oh, that's a high.
That's too high?
It's our first episode, and you're okay. Giving Return to Oz a 6? Now, someone did message me last week when we talked about it on the Michael Mara Show and said this was her favorite movie as a kid.
I can see that. Kids can be weird. Kids can love it. I mean,
yeah, and I guess these are the kids that grew up into The Crow and those type of shows.
Well, I mean, even with my sort of love of nostalgia, when Robert was little, his favorite movie was The Wolfman. He loved The Wolfman, and he would, anytime we had like a visitor, he'd say, he called it Talbot because that's the name of the guy who turns into the Wolfman, Larry Talbot. He'd say, "Would you like to watch Talbot?" And they, yes. And he'd say, "Be careful. It's really scary." But there are kids that like to be frightened, I think. So I can see it being someone's favorite.
Will you tell Robert to sit down and watch Return to Oz?
No. I don't have many plus points built up with him. I'm not going to burn it on that. But so what? How many fever dreams do you give it out of 10?
I am going to give it a 3.
3? Only 3?
I'm going so low on this movie. And that 3 is because it was cool to see the beginnings of movie special effects and very early, different special effects all mixed into this. But I'm going very low because it has scarred me for 40 years.
Okay, understood. And I think I have a little advantage there because of my age that it didn't scar me, but it did scare me. So there we are.
Once we get the social media stuff up and going, we'll keep track of these scores.
Well, it's an average of 4.5 fever dreams out of 10. I guess I skewed high. I just enjoyed watching it. So, but the thing is I would knock it down. If you pitched this to me as a singular movie, I'd give it a better rating than if you pitched it to me as a sequel to The Wizard of Oz. That's how I feel about it.
Totally. Okay. It would be much better if it was not Oz.
Yeah.
And it was a movie that it was kind of like a movie where you felt like, oh, they're trying to rip off Oz.
Right.
But it's not Oz.
Exactly. All right. So, that's it. I hope everyone paused this podcast and watched the movie. So it made sense. But if you haven't, please go watch it now. Now, I hold in my hand our movie for next week.
All right. I like this because now we're doing it properly.
Exactly. And I chose this movie.
Right? I haven't heard this movie, so I have a week to watch it. The listeners have a week to watch it. And you even sealed the envelope. Okay.
Just like Johnny. The movie we're going to watch next week is... Hope you like musicals.
If you want to have a lot of fun with those envelopes.
Yeah.
Write down about 50 movies, put them in envelopes, and you don't even know which one's coming out.
Maybe as we get along with the ride. Do you like musicals? I have to ask. I know you like music.
They're okay.
Okay.
Certain ones. I mean, I like Wizard of Oz. I was all right. Wicked, I enjoyed.
Okay. So Warner Brothers in 1942 made this movie.
1942.
Yankee Doodle Dandy. Okay. The story of George M. Cohan as portrayed by famous gangster James Cagney. One of my all-time favorites. I didn't even ask you about it because I know you've never seen it.
I've never heard of Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Oh, it was a favorite to the Oscars. It was a massive hit, and we can talk about why.
Now,
It fell into the timeline.
Have you checked to see if I can stream this somewhere?
I'm sure you can get it through Turner on the HBO app. You'll be able to find it, I'm certain. But it is a tremendous film. And also, one of the reasons I chose it is the reason that we call this show Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. Here's a small clip from the movie Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Sticks, Nicks, Hicks, Picks. Greek. I'll bet that's Greek talk.
No, that ain't Greek. That's Swedish or Russian. Sticks, Nicks, Hicks, Picks.
Well, that's show business talk. Here, I'll translate it for you. Sticks, small towns, Nicks, refuse. Hicks, Rube, Picks, pictures. Small towns refuse, Rube, pictures. Sticks, Nicks, Hicks, Picks.
Sticks, Nicks, Hicks, Picks.
See, that's why I named it that way.
Who's that actor? Who's that actor in that clip?
The guy laying down in the... Yeah, that's James Cagney.
Why does he look like a Muppet?
Because that's age makeup in 1942. Okay. They're making up to be older. So yeah, do watch Yankee Doodle Dandy. I think people should watch Return to Oz and face their fears.
All right, I see it is available to rent for $3.99 on Apple TV.
Excellent. We will absolutely add that to the budget of this fine podcast. This has been Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. I had a blast. I am most excited about talking Yankee Doodle Dandy with you next week. I feel that you will enjoy it, even though it is an over-the-top 1940s musical. So, folks, check it out. You can stream it on Apple TV or buy the digital versatile disc, as I did.
Or just lay on a little mat and go electrocute yourself.
I need my electric headphones. All right, folks, that's it for this debut episode of Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. I'm Rob Spiewak.
I'm Josh Soroka.
And we will see you next week with James Cagney. So long, everybody.
Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. A podcast about Rob's movies with Rob Spiewak and Josh Soroka.